This podcast is a member of the Place to Be Nation family. Visit us at placetobenation.com, the only place to be in your pop culture world.
All right. Hey, folks, we're back for another Super Extreme Vault. It's been a while, and another Super Extreme Vault where we're not talking about ECW pay-per-views. So that's always good. How you doing, Mark?
I'm doing fantastic, Steven. What's happening?
Recovering from the flu.
Well, I know what's happening. You just finished watching everything I finished watching, so I kind of know that you're probably also in a somewhat off mental state, maybe. As these matches might do to us.
They're a little disturbing, some of them, that's for sure. We'll get into that. Glenn, are you okay?
I've been disturbed for a very long time. I've actually been looking for a venue to talk about all the ways that I've been traumatized and knocked off base and just generally away from the psychological norm. And I'm glad that we have this opportunity now to really delve into it. You know, I think it all started, of course, with The Undertaker.
Oh.
Because the fastest we can get to The Undertaker talk on here, the better, really.
Well, we just set a record just now.
Yeah. So. That one.
Good start.
That one.
Or do we have to tie it in for it to count to what we're actually watching?
Yeah, we might. We'll have to get there naturally.
There's some good segues later.
I've got some ideas.
Cool.
But yeah, so this week, this month, whatever it is, we're talking about Japanese death matches. I got a playlist here on YouTube, so if anyone wants to watch along, you know, pause this podcast, you can watch all the matches. I'll put the playlist link in the description. So, be warned, there's some disturbing and bloody and violent actions that we'll be talking about.
It says a lot. That's the first time I think you've had to issue a warning on this show. We've watched some really, really violent shit. So
I know.
A lot about what's going on here.
It's supposed to be a hardcore podcast, but I feel like this is the first time it's like really hardcore, you know? Like this took it up a notch from everything we've watched in ECW and stuff.
Yeah. There really is a difference in scale between your typical ECW brawls and the sort of, well, death matches, really. I mean, that itself carries a suggestion that there's a little more blood and guts, a little more gore.
Yeah, but like let's get into this here. We've got Terry Funk in the first match, ECW legend. Anita, hardcore deathmatch legend, kind of the operator of FMW, copied his ideas from either Memphis or Puerto Rico, depending on who you talk to. And this is the fourth anniversary show of FMW. It's in Kawasaki Stadium. There's 41,000 people here to see Terry Funk and Onita in an exploding no rope barbed wire exploding ring time bomb death match.
take a breath after you finish saying that name. I mean, you might pass out.
Yeah. So, before the match, we got Onita coming out the Wild Thing, which was just great. But first, I want Glenn to talk about the referee's attire.
Yes, thank you.
Can I butt in before we even do that?
Yeah, go for it.
I know it's early to butt in, but Glenn has literally said nothing, but yes. But I really like, before we even got to the ring, before we even got to the match, which is why I'm butting in, I really like they did like the locker room shots in the beginning, because that's a very sports type thing. Yeah. I work in sports production. That's like a lot of what I do is like a lot of that pregame stuff. So I just like that they were really treating it like a big deal even before they got into the ring. They showed the guys in the locker room. They showed the guys getting ready. So even without knowing the context, I just knew that this was a big deal right off the bat. So I just thought that was cool. Now to Glenn.
This referee was amazing. One of the very first things I noticed about the match, actually, was that the referee is dressed like the Shredder.
Yep.
It was like the Shredder as a beekeeper.
Yes! He doesn't need the metal mask, just like a drapery foil mask, almost. Which is supposed to protect him. I'm not entirely sure, because his eyes are clear and his hands are clear, because those are the parts that you need as a referee. but it's just kind of amazing. And maybe I was already on the way to thinking about this since this is all Japanese stuff. And he's like kind of a, you know, manga character or whatever, but it's just so amazing to have the Shredder in the ring. I mean, is the next match going to have Krang?
I wrote protective samurai armor outfit.
You know, I actually think one of the matches we have later is Bebop versus Rocksteady.
Well, we'll get into that. But Mark, what are your kind of thoughts on this match? Or why don't you explain the rules of this match, if you can?
I will do my best. So it seems that the rules are that it starts out as a, as much as you can say, ordinary exploding no rope barbed wire match, where they, I guess, so there's no ropes, there's just barbed wire instead of ropes. So clearly that's perilous. And then, but as a catch, if you get thrown against these barbed wire ropes / non-ropes, then an explosion will occur. And I guess that will hurt you. So you want to avoid that. And then when there's 5 minutes left, I guess in whatever preordained time this was, which wasn't really clear how much time the time it was, but a timer will start at 5 minutes. And it will have a very creepy sound to it, which we'll discuss later. And then that timer will count down, and then 1 minute left, it'll get even scarier and more intense. And I guess if they don't finish the match by the end of that timer, apparently the ring is going to explode and everyone's going to die.
Sounds about right. Yep. So, Glenn, what are your thoughts on the match then?
This match, to me, was surprisingly subtle.
Yep. That's good.
Unlike its title.
Yes, any match that's billed as an exploding no rope barbed wire exploding ring time bomb death match that has like small moves, or I shouldn't say move, but shifts that happens in gestures. I mean, it is very surprising. A lot of the psychology about this match, to the extent that any of our terms about talking about wrestling apply, the psychology of this match was just to keep the other guy from shoving you over 3 feet to the left.
Yeah.
So there were times when they grabbed a headlock and tried to, you know, shove one or the other, which in a normal match would happen as a matter of course, or an Irish whip where someone would have to resist, or just the two guys trying to shove each other. And so there would be these stalemate spots where, if you take a step back and really think about it, it's just two guys standing in place trying to shove each other. But everything involved in it makes it dramatic and makes it big. And so there are these small gestures that do become more important in a match where you really wouldn't expect that to be the case. I mean, the most devastating maneuver you could do in this match is the Irish whip.
Yep.
And how can you, and you know, what was the last match where the Irish whip was devastating? Was that like 1952?
It was like a finishing move then.
Yeah.
Well, around the time the
Irish whip into the corner, 1, 2, 3, done.
Yeah, exactly. Around the time the Fez Press was a finisher.
Bret Hart, when he got Irish whipped, it was deadly.
He is okay. The best Irish whip seller of all time. Absolutely.
Onita.
That's why Ric Flair was always flipping out of that thing, because he knew if he actually got hit with it, it'd be over.
That's true. He's smart.
Onita was selling Terry Funk's punches like a champ. I mean, it's what sends him into the wire for the first explosion, which, like, the barbed wire tears at his shirt and the explosion singes it, so he comes off it with like this big hole in the back of his shirt. Gosh, it's ridiculous. And then they're going back and forth. At one point, they're both on their hands and knees on the mat, and Terry Funk hits a junkyard dog headbutt, which I definitely appreciate.
Yeah.
Also, after he gets thrown into the barbed wire once or twice, we get Terry Funk's awesome wobbly leg selling. He's got to be one of the best in the business at that.
Oh yeah,
number one, in my view.
Oh yeah. For sure. Oh, man. And, like, every time they get close to the barbed wire, it's just so intense. And, like, the...
Oh, yeah.
Hear the crowd going, oh!
Yeah.
Oh.
It's just crazy. Man, and then at one point, like, the referee gets, like, Onita gets finally tosses Funk into it, and he starts selling like crazy, right? And then, like, the referee gets whipped out of the way by, Terry Funk rolls over him.
Yeah, I wanted to mention that, too. There's one point Terry Funk takes a swipe at the Shredder, and I'm wondering if that's just because he has blood in his eyes and he can't see who it is, or because he's just pissed off at the Shredder.
Maybe. Oh, man. But yeah, this is so intense. So we had all that intense stuff. At one point, both of them go through the barbed wire to the floor, and it's just crazy. But they get back in the ring, and then the 5-minute clock countdown starts up.
Oh, God. Yes, this klaxon.
What did you think about the clock, Mark?
Yeah, you know, the first thing I thought of is, because I had recently heard a review of this match on Chad and Parv's Top 100 Matches podcast. This was Chad's number 100, and he actually discussed, which is very disturbing, actually, now that I've watched it, how he would watch this match while his newborn was, like, in a cradle or something, and then when this, like, sound came on of the timer, the newborn would, like, start to go crazy, and I don't know how old the child was, but it was just really funny to me. It's a really almost a hypnotic sound, this timer, this 5-minute timer comes in, and it's this, like, I don't think I can even recreate it with my mouth right now, but it's just, like, it's creepy and weird and captivating in a way.
It is, yeah.
I found myself like staring at the screen like, oh my god, what's going on? I'm now hypnotized. I'm now really, really watching this match, even though I was already really into it. I'm like, what's gonna happen to the end of the timer? Is it really gonna explode? What the hell is going on? And I wasn't even really sure. I mean, I guess I assumed that you have to, the idea is to get out of the ring before the ring explodes, because that's what's happening at the end of the match. But well, we'll see that with the finish, I guess. Or do you want me to just talk about the finish?
Oh, but before we go ahead, like, at this point, when that timer starts, both men just go nuts trying to finish
right,
the other guy.
There's a sense of gravity that comes in there when the timer, it's like they remember, oh, yeah, and not only is everything barbed wire and explosions, but shit, we got this ring's going to explode in 5 minutes. So we really got to, one of us has to try to win this match. So, yeah, they start just going nuts on each other, and the crowd, their intensity kind of heats up too. And so between that and the timer and the music, and really just the drama of the match, which was already there because of the crowd and because of these two great workers, it really just escalates exponentially as the clock goes down until it gets to that minute point when it kicks into that other, like, faster timer gear, and then you're like, oh my god, what the hell is going on?
Sirens go off!
Yeah, they started layering them. Like, the klaxon started, and I was thinking, is this seriously gonna go on for the rest of the match?
Yes.
Oh, but it does. And then Onita wins at with 2:45 left. He gets a pin. But the klaxon continues because you promise an exploding ring, you blow up the damn ring. Armageddon cannot be averted. And then, yeah, at 1 minute, the siren comes in, and it doesn't just replace the klaxon. They're layered on top of each other, both going off at the same time.
It's so intense. It's so intense.
Yeah. And then at one point, Onita's outside the ring, and he almost escapes. But then he goes back in after Funk.
There's 20 seconds left.
There's a really interesting... Yeah, go ahead.
Yeah, he sees that Funk's alone, and he's like, oh, I'm getting out of here. And he's like, shit, like, I can't let this guy die.
Well, I think it's really interesting how it played out, because actually, if we go back to the finish, which is actually pretty good, even if it's just a regular match, it was a good finish. Like, Terry Funk's putting on his signature toe hold, gets thrown into the barbed wire, the last remaining, I think, barbed wire to explode, and then gets DDT'd, which I assume was Onita's finisher,
wins
the match. And then... Onita, you know, the match ends, and then I don't remember exactly what was happening, but Funk goes nuts, and like when he realizes he like comes to and realizes he lost, he starts choking Onita. He beats up the ref, and he just goes nuts on Onita. Like, he starts choking the crap out of him, and then Onita comes back from that, power bombs him twice, and then says, "All right, screw this guy. He tried to choke me after the match, so I'm gonna power bomb him and leave." And then you see Onita rolls out of the ring to avoid the barbed wire, and then, like you said, at around 20 seconds, he has that revelation. You see the look change on his eyes. He's filled with hate and anger, and then he looks in the ring, kind of looks in the crowd, looks in the ring again, really thinks about, you can see his mind going like, yeah, I hate this guy, but I don't want him to literally explode and die. So he runs into the ring under the barbed wire and starts shaking Terry Funk and slapping him to try to wake him up, like get out of the ring, starts trying to push him towards the edge. And then finally, when they get to like 3 seconds, he's like, screw it, I'm not going to get him out of the ring, and just covers him as if to protect him from the bomb, which is just, it's such a great story, I think. Like,
yeah.
Really, you saw this brutal match between these two. And then you see, even after the match, Terry Funk tries to murder him by choking him. And even after that, Onita doesn't want to actually see him explode in many pieces, which we see from the bomb isn't what would have happened. But it's still very dramatic. I really did enjoy that whole sequence.
Oh, yeah, yeah, talk about a baby face.
Yeah. And then, yeah, so the explosion goes off, and it's just ridiculous. And then the music changes, right?
Yes. Yes, there's this vaguely mournful guitar solo that comes in, makes it feel like the end of Lethal Weapon or something.
Yeah, it's like the end of a war movie or a Quentin Tarantino movie.
Suddenly it became a John Woo movie, like after the big shooting scene when like everyone is dead and there's just smoke and like one survivor. That's what it felt like.
Yeah. And these two leave like they're war buddies now. Like they survived a war together. They fought their battle, but they survived. So
except they're back in the locker room, and Onita goes for the handshake, and Funk refuses him.
Funk put his hand out first, as if we should probably shake hands.
Yeah, he puts his hand out too, and then he says, "I appreciate what you did for me, but I can't be beaten by you," which is such, I mean, Funk comes in the beginning in you know, chaps and the whole cowboy outfit that anyone from the South has to wear when they're in Japan. And it's this like Western style machismo, right?
Yeah.
It's the cowboy making the last stand, and you know, he does this whole thing where next time it's my rules. Yeah. You know, you fought barbed wire matches before, next time it's teacher's rules. I guess they had like an apprentice story going or something. Or not maybe sure. He just is saying he's gonna school him, I'm not sure. But there's this like nobility in stoicism that Funk is going for there. Yeah. And when he says that, and when he walks out, Onita looks like his whole world has come crumbling down. I mean, he looks just absolutely ashen and heartbroken. I mean, it has come crashing down, and it hurts inside, guys.
Yeah, he's not angry. He's actually sad that Funk refused his overtures. He thought, yeah, okay, we had our battle. We made up, we are friends, and yet, no.
But then there's more. We get him stitched up, we get him to talking to fans, and then he leaves in an ambulance, Onita.
That thing with him, he leaves the building and goes over to a chain link fence lined with more barbed wire, just to underline the thematic issues, where his people are waiting for him on the other side for their fearless leader's rallying cry or something. You know, he delivers this message unto them, and they lap it up, and then he like points toward the sky and they freeze frame.
Yes.
In like the most glorious campy moment.
One thing, man, though, Onita, like, I have no idea what he's saying, but he has to be one of the best promos of all time. Like, don't you think? You have no idea what he's
Absolutely.
Saying, but oh my gosh. He's
I didn't
so
need to
charismatic.
Know, but I knew the spirit of what he was saying. I like how, I don't know if you noticed when he's addressing the fans too outside, he was actually doing it like through the barbed wire part of the fence. I thought that was like, I don't know if it was just like random or if it was just the beautiful like ending, the beautiful like coming full circle with this thing where he's addressing the fans. There's like barbed wire right on top of the fence where he was.
Yeah. Oh man.
I doubt they thought that much through it, but
yeah. So this was awesome. This I think is a classic, and I
watched it twice, and I can honestly say it's in some amount of, I've never thought of what my top matches are, top 100, top 500, but it's in a conversation about that whenever I have that conversation with myself, for sure.
Yeah, I think I'm doing a list at the end of the year. Brad from Place to Be Nation has convinced me and Tim to try it, and I've got to find room for this match. Like, it's so special. Like, how many matches are this dramatic, this intense, have this much stakes? Like,
yeah, exploding, blowing up. That's a big thing.
Just the whole clock too. Like, oh, everything about it. Did you love this, Glenn, or can you sleep at night anymore?
Well, I'll see you a little later on. I think I'll be able to sleep. It was definitely, it was dramatic. It had a lot of, there was a lot of meat on the bone, you know? And without understanding hardly any of it in terms of, you know, the commentary or the promos from Onita. So that just his acting and the in-ring acting really got a lot of that across. Probably more than any other Japanese match that I've seen, frankly, although that's not saying much because I haven't seen all that many.
Fair enough. Let's move on then. We've got another match here, and I don't know if you guys know this, but back in the mid to late 90s when tape trading was the big thing, right? Some of these deathmatch tapes became very popular. Like, they're the tapes to get. And I didn't have a lot of Japanese matches at the time, but this next one is one I had, and I kind of picked it just because, like, it was one from my, like, early Japanese watching of tapes. So I wanted to share that with you guys. But we got Headhunter A versus Headhunter B in a glass death match from IWA Japan, May 1st, 1995. So if you guys don't know who the Headhunters are out there, they're short, morbidly obese, identical twins who do moonsaults. And they're about to have a glass death match. And I'm
can I get my own description of the Headhunters?
Yeah, go for it.
Abdullah the Butcher meets the Mario Brothers.
Okay.
Ah, you scooped me.
That's good.
You scooped me. Literally, the first thing I was going to say about this match, one of the first things I thought when I started watching it, was that I have no idea which one is Headhunter A and which one is Headhunter B, so I'll call them Mario and Luigi.
Nice. Yeah, I mean, those are clear. At least Luigi's, or I mean, Mario / Headhunter B, I believe, was clearly a Mario brother to me.
Yeah, I mean, the Luigi wasn't as clear, but I mean, one of them was wearing red and one of them isn't.
Yeah, the other one's wearing white, I believe.
Overalls we got, and then it looked like more athletic Abdullah the Butchers.
They're like shrunken Abdullah the Butchers.
Yeah, that can like move a little bit.
Yeah. So, this is probably the most disturbing match we watched, but,
agreed.
Why don't you, go ahead, Glenn?
Well, as soon as I dubbed them Mario and Luigi, I immediately started rooting for Luigi, because fuck Mario. And of course, Mario controlled most of the match. Whereas the psychology, so to say, of the last match was about not being shoved into the barbed wire ropes, this one is about each of the Mario brothers struggling not to get rolled off the apron into barbed wire or sheets of plywood and like pools of glass. They had like glass panes suspended in plywood, probably boxes. And so they're struggling. Mario is trying to like roll Luigi around, kick him off the apron, and he's holding onto the ropes. He's struggling to stay up. After this, they're on the floor amongst all this barbed wire and glass and all this, and Luigi grabs a chair.
Yeah.
And you wonder, well, what? How much damage could he do when they're going to be doing all this stuff with the barbed wire, plywood, and the glass and everything? But he gets a solid crack with that chair onto Mario, and then takes control. At one point, he Irish whips Mario from corner to corner in what must be the least amount of effort I have ever seen put into an Irish whip. He just, like, flicks his wrist and Mario goes running to the corner. Of course, Mario takes control again. He kicks Luigi onto the barbed plywood. Then, this is on the floor, and then stands it up against the ring and Irish whips Luigi into it. They take some broken glass and blades Luigi with it, which is gross.
Just disgusting.
And to be clear, this is not the kind of blading we're used to in wrestling where you don't see it occur. This is where they turn glass into a blade and cut the shit out of your head.
Oh, or one hand grabs the guy's head, and the other hand just has the shard of glass, and you stab and you slice. And if it's rough.
And there's all these Japanese reporters or photographers like huddled around waiting for this moment of the one like gash on the head. It's just like kind of weird and creepy. It makes me think about the state of humanity, at least in Japan.
Yeah.
and then we start going up to the top turnbuckle.
Yeah.
Which whenever. I don't remember if I said this on this podcast before or on some other one, but in any match where a big fat guy goes up to the top, I am hoping and praying that he's going to hit that moonsault. Because there have been times when Big Show has teased it and it hasn't happened. There have been times when, I don't know about Vader. He usually just did the Vader bomb.
He does moonsault.
He did. Maybe I saw some match where he teased that I'm thinking of, but Bam Bam sometimes maybe. There are all these big fat guys, and I keep wanting to see them connect with one, but no one wants to actually take it. and so Mario goes up to the top, does a splash. That's predictable enough. He goes, if I can call anything in this match predictable, but all right, we're in a specific context here. He Mario goes back up to the top, does the Macho Man flying elbow. Better. You know, decent technique. Later on, Luigi goes up top, hits the John Cena leg drop.
Yeah, was awesome. I love
that. That was pretty cool.
I love fat flying leg drops. Like, they're one of my favorite things.
Yes, in wrestling. That will be on your gravestone. You lived a good life and loved that.
Luigi goes back up top, hits the flying elbow. Honestly, not as good as Mario's, but whatever. And then, Luigi sandwiches Mario between two sheets of barbed wire plywood, goes up to the top, and my wishes, my hopes, my prayers are answered. He hits the damn moonsault, and Mario kicks out because fuck Mario.
And this is when the crowd is going insane at B's kickout, by the way. And I guess B is the face, apparently. Because
yeah, like, the crowd's B. chanting, B, B, B.
Here's what I want to be sent to me by a loyal listener. I want a comp of the build up to this match. The promos, they speak English, so I'll be able to understand it. The angles, the promos. I want to know what tore these brothers apart and what made B so much more sympathetic. I really am dying.
Well, when we get past the end of the match, we can talk about how torn apart they are.
Well, yeah. I don't want to give any spoilers away for
spoilers. Sorry, but if someone does have that comp, we if I have any power in this world, we will go back and do like an interstitial special on this. If anyone
gets sent to me, we will do that. I will stop everything in my life. I know I'm hard to schedule with podcasts. I will do it at midnight. I mean, I don't care. I will do it. It needs to be
listeners. All of the men and women and various other gendered people of the PWO, PTBN listening audience, please, please, please get us this footage.
You know someone out there has it. The nerds that listen to this feed, and I don't mean that in a bad way. I'm a nerd too, so I'm just talking to nerds who are nerdier than I am and better at being a nerd. So
isn't Johnny Sorrow's house like 90% DVDs?
I don't think they're IWA Japan DVD stuff.
Yeah. Were these guys ever in, like, fucking Mid-South?
They were in Puerto Rico. And they were in CMLL.
I'll take any headhunters.
They had a run in Arena Mexico in CMLL.
That makes a lot of sense, actually.
I can see, yeah.
So, we had that moonsault, but there's the more disgusting, more vicious suplex into the plate of glass.
Yes. Oh. The humanity.
I don't even know what to say about that.
And I assume, I mean, this really seems like real glass, right? I mean, this.
Yeah, it's real glass.
I mean, this is all happening. I mean, we can talk about how wrestling's rigged and scripted and all this shit, but these dudes are getting cut by glass. I mean,
yeah, exactly. They're literally cutting each other with it. That can't just be like windshield glass or movie glass or whatever.
Ugh. No, this was disturbing. And then we got a few big splashes, and yeah, the match is over.
Well, you didn't mention which was which. So it's B that kicks out, and then A or slash Luigi says, well, I'm going to suplex you through the glass, but then B turns him around, reverses the suplex, and finally gets his comeuppance on A.
Yeah, big win for B.
Then he does his big Fat Boy Splash too to end it. Yeah. And he fell off once too. We should.
Oh yeah, completely slipped and still fell on Luigi. So whatever. when Mario reverses and suplexes Luigi into the sheet of glass, the referee falls over in solidarity.
Yep. Just out of complete shock and horror at what he just saw, he falls over. As I did as well.
So I hadn't seen this since like the mid-90s or whatever, late 90s.
Where's the cop you watched it on? I mean, that had to have some build-up on it, no?
No, I just had the match. I think it was a selection of matches from everywhere, so it was just in there. Might have been a Schneider cop. I'm not sure about that. Anyways,
I'm interested now. You got this at a young age. Did this like define your childhood in any way?
Is this amazing?
Well, here's the thing: you guys are kind of missing about late '90s tapes or mid '90s tapes is they were so grainy. Like a lot of this viciousness, you couldn't really see. Like you saw people being cut with glass and stuff, but it was, you know, there was tracking issues. You know, tapes trading back then was a whole different world than DVDs and YouTube and stuff like that. Like it wasn't as easy to see. You didn't get as good screen as we did here. But I actually felt bad after I watched this, and then I knew you guys were gonna watch it after me, and I think I apologized on our Facebook chat. I was like, I'm sorry. I thought maybe we'd all quit the show, but yeah, this was something. Mark, overall thoughts on this one?
Definitely the most. I mean, we are an extreme vault hardcore podcast, but this is the most extreme, I think, thing we've seen. Because it was just, it's the most gore, it's the goriest. It felt like kind of a horror movie, if a horror movie starred Big Fat Mario and Luigi's. And, yeah, it was, I guess it was good. I really liked the last, like, couple minutes where they, I mean, the build up to the end was, except for his fall off the top rope, was like moonsaults through tables, reversing glass through the glass, and then, oh, did we talk about the post match yet? No, we didn't.
No, go ahead.
No, not yet.
Because that's awesome too. So after this whole thing, you know, they've literally tried to kill each other, and B is the winner, and he's kind of leaving. He starts to leave, but he comes back. I guess there's these other wrestlers in the ring helping A or whatever, and B comes in and beats the shit out of them, throws them out of the ring. At some point just blows a fireball into the ring. I'm not even sure who it was at. He's just kind of going nuts and being crazy. And then he comes back in the ring and A's looking at him and they walk over and they just hug each other. And they after that shit, they are just fucking back to being boys, back to being twin brothers. And, to prove their solidarity, they grab the ref and, slam him through the glass. So just to show them what's up. And then we get a great post-match promo with these bloody fat fucking Mario and Luigi's in the locker room talking about how everyone thought they hated each other or thought they were going to be apart. And he was talking to the ref, and I don't really totally understand this line, but I think it was B or Mario that said, "You got what you deserve because you thought we'd betray each other." And I don't know what that means, because the referee, if anything, is the guy that just up very closely watched them cut each other with glass. So,
yeah, seriously.
I don't know what that. I don't really understand that line or why he deserved to go through the glass for anything. But you know, wrestling logic.
Seriously, he goes on about, you know, blood is thicker than water. Well, it wasn't a minute ago, asshole. It was flowing like the sea.
I feel like Terry Funk Onita. I mean, it was violent, but it wasn't like, I felt like it could be like a respect match, but this didn't really feel that way. This felt like two guys literally attempting murder. during for 20 minutes, you know? So I'm very intrigued by the backstory. I want to know about their career together. I want to know about their childhood. I want to know how they broke up, how they became so violent towards one another, and how they so quickly reconciled and decided that the best way to prove that reconciliation was to throw the referee through glass.
Yeah, maybe we need to do a Headhunter special someday.
That's where I'm leaning towards.
Okay.
Well,
yeah.
I'm saying, just send us the footage, people.
We'll watch it.
Yeah. Promise. Well, and then we get to watch some lucha, so that'd be good.
That's kind of like a fans bring the weapons match. You know, listeners bring the footage, and we'll do
that.
The
would
podcast.
Be fun to do. Just tell listeners, send us the most extreme stuff you can find, and we'll do like listener viewing episodes.
Oh,
listener's choice.
Listener's choice. That's a very ECW thing. They used to do that. Fans bring the weapons matches. So
sure.
Now we can do a show where fans can decide what to traumatize us with.
Yeah.
Exactly. And if we ever manage to all meet up in the same location, as unlikely as that might be, then fans can suggest weapons that we bash each other with.
We will cut each other's heads with glass, and then we'll all hug at the end and throw someone else through glass.
That sounds great. Any final thoughts, Glenn?
Woof.
Okay, let's move on. So, we're back to...
And Mario won! Sorry, yeah. Glenn.
Yeah, sorry. So...
Freaking Mario.
We're gonna go back to FMW for the rest of the stuff here. And we're gonna go to the 7th anniversary show this time. And we're gonna have two matches from the 7th anniversary. We're gonna start off with, Cactus Jack taking on...
These are from the same show? These next two matches?
These next two matches are from the same show.
That's a hell of a show. That actually... Okay, I'll remember that as a talking point.
Yeah, it's the 7th anniversary of FMW.
Can I just ask?
Yeah.
As general background on FMW, were they all or primarily death matches, hardcore matches, or was it just something they specialized in and tended to do more than other promotions? Because I know they have the reputation for it. For being
early FMW was Onita taking on like boxers and kickboxers and stuff. Onita, like, it would mostly be like the big matches, because like not all matches were that. You'd have like Taka and Great Suzuki in there for matches. You had a lot of the women's wrestlers. Not all the matches were like this. It seemed to be more just the, you know, maybe this the upper card, but it wasn't like the whole show was death matches or anything like that.
Interesting.
Yeah. So, and you know, you had like Hayabusa, who was actually a good wrestler and stuff like that. So like looking at the 7th anniversary, there is three death matches at the end of the 12 match show. So not everything's death matches here. Oh my god, the Rock and Roll Express were on the show.
What? Not in a death match, I presume.
Yeah, who was cutting them up with glass?
It was the Rock and Roll Express and Ricky Fuji versus the Crypt Keeper, Boogeyman, and Freddy Krueger.
Boogeyman? Wow, he really was older than he said on Tough Enough.
Robert Englund wrestled at FMW?
Yeah.
No?
So,
remember that.
That's something to look out for. Oh, Jason the Terrible was in the open, too. So... A lot of monsters on that.
I like how you said, who is Jason the Terrible? You said that so matter-of-factly. Like,
he was basically doing Jason from Friday the 13th.
Oh, Jason. Okay. That Jason. I just had never heard him referred to as the Terrible before.
Oh, and there was also Super Leather on the show, who was doing Leatherface gimmick. So.
Woof.
Yeah. Quite the anniversary show. But they had 33,000 people there. So that's impressive.
Yes.
So big show. But let's get to the first match we're going to watch from that. It's Cactus Jack and Wing Kimura in a Caribbean spider net, panes of glass, barbed wire boards death match, a barbed wire barricade spider net, broken glass death match, whatever the hell you want to call it.
Oh my god.
But before the match, we got a nice little promo from Cactus Jack. What did you think of this, Mark?
Yeah, it was a good, solid Cactus Jack, I'm hardcore, if you think you're hardcore, you gotta go through me promo. don't really recall word for word, but I remember thinking, all right, that's classic Cactus Jack. And we would see a lot of classic Cactus Jack in this match. It's interesting when you, I mean, I guess everyone knows Mick Foley's hardcore, but it's just so funny that nowadays he is like, his big thing is like dressing up as Santa Claus for like a year. I mean, he's like, he's does this big puffy lovable dude, but my God, he really, I mean, we all know about his hardcore matches, but his hardcore character was a very good one, a very underrated. Well, I don't know. He's probably not underrated. He's probably rated.
But I think people are a little down on him after his last, you know, seven comebacks or whatever.
He became overexposed in his old age for sure. But I mean, his actual Cactus Jack character before all the three faces of Foley and all that shit is solid gold as far as I'm concerned.
Yeah. Glenn, have you ever seen Cactus before the WWF?
I've seen a little bit of him in ECW. I had never seen him in Japan before, and I don't think I've seen any of his stuff in WCW, although I know some of it is highly rated.
Yeah, mostly the Vader feud, for sure.
Yeah, this is some of the earliest stuff I've seen from Foley, and God, he is svelte here.
This is like, if you look at this date, this is like a month before the King of the Ring 96.
Seriously?
Yeah.
Wait, how did he pack on 50 pounds in that time?
No, that can't be right, because he wasn't wrestling for both at the same time.
This was May 5th, 1996.
Oh God.
Wait, which King of the Ring was the crazy? That was like 98, right?
Yeah, that was 98.
Okay, so he debuted.
This is versus the Taker, the first one. I think he debuted in the WWF before this.
He debuted on a Raw.
He debuted before
that
this.
He debuted like shortly after WrestleMania, didn't he?
Yeah, so he was doing some shots for FMW.
Maybe he just had dates to finish up, and they
yeah,
said, yeah. Maybe that was one of those things like they do for a bunch of guys today, where they sign someone just, you know, go finish your dates.
Could you imagine the WWE letting someone go and do a match like this nowadays under their contract?
I imagine they didn't know exactly what he was doing. It might just have been, hey, I have some dates left in Japan. I need this week or whatever. So this promo I thought was one of the best, well, probably the best part of this match for me. First off, he calls him Kenny Mora, which I just think is so like, that's the combination that Cactus had, right? Where he's scary and he's like, you dread him because he's such a hard, he's the king of the death matches. He's hardcore, bang, bang. But he's also got these little absurd notes, right?
Yeah, for sure.
He says at one point, you know, I'll be damned if I'm going to step onto that plane with my wounds sticking to the seat. And I love how Foley was always good at taking the hardcore wrestling stuff and grounding it in the human, you know, with all of his anti-hardcore promos in ECW was all about the human cost, the toll that it took on his body. And that connection I always found really compelling. How trying to make people think about the effect that these things have. It's not just you go and see a match and everyone gets cut up because it's gruesome and everything. It's, I'm going to have to fly home with, you know, stitches or staples or maybe still with some glass in my back sitting in the plane for however long. You know, it's that sort of thing that you don't tend to think about in wrestling.
Oh, for sure. Yeah. And what did you think of the match?
Well, I was interested in the apparatus. Like, what did you call it? That thing that the only description I could think of was some very tentatively scaffolded barbed wire.
It was like spider net.
Spider net. That is a very interesting description of that. I mean, it makes enough sense in that it makes no sense, but still. I like, even though Foley is a lot smaller than you'd expect seeing him later on, they still do a little bit of that, of the big little difference, because Kenny Mora is still smaller than he is. So there was a lot of stress about trying to push each other into the spider net, where Cactus had the advantage because of his size. There's a spot where Kenimura tries to suplex Foley into it, but he can't suplex him, but Foley can suplex him. So that stuff is, you know, basic functional wrestling. He gets the advantage, you know, slams and strikes and all that. The match itself, maybe I built up a little too much in my head because it's Foley and I kind of like Foley, but I found it just a little bit ho-hum.
Yeah. I'm curious what you think, Mark.
I thought it was pretty. I actually watched it twice. Sorry. There's like a helicopter flying overhead now. They're coming for me.
Cheese it, the feds.
I watched it twice. So the first time I kind of felt like Glenn felt, which is, good, enjoyable, and then, like, kind of disappointing. And then the second time I liked it more, which is kind of how I felt with most of these matches. Cause I ended up having time to watch them a second time because I wasn't disturbed enough the first time around. it did feel more like, I like some of the psychology, like at first they're trying to push each other into the barbed wire, but they're unsuccessful at it. They're trying to they're holding each other's head right over it, like almost about to get them, and then they can't do it. And then after some fighting on the outside, when they're a little bit weaker, they're able to fight after they fall through those. I don't know what those things on the outside are. They're like upside down tables with like barbed wire and just stakes sticking out of them. Like it's like, and then it truly looks painful when, Wing, if I think he's the first one to go into it, goes into this whole contraption out that's set up outside the ring. And then he's just laying there. He gets beat up by Cactus. Cactus takes a chair and like beats the hell out of him. And there's this one shot that sticks in my mind of Wing Kanemura just laying there like with like barbed wire wrapped around him. He's bloody. There's like wooden stakes. Like I'm not even sure if he can get out of the contraption he's like laying in. He just looks like he's been totally just devastated. He looks like a total mess. And I thought it was very effective at getting over the brutality. The Headhunter match looked more brutal in terms of like blood and like grossness, but this actually, in terms of the physicality, I thought looked a lot more brutal with actually the things they're flying into, like the way like at one point Wing. By the way, as a side note, I've seen Wing Kanemura's name spelled as capital W apostrophe or star ing. Do you have any insight on that? As a little aside, I think that I've seen it more than once.
I've seen that for a few Japanese guys, and I don't understand it at all. It's weird to me, but cool. I kind of like it.
I like it. I just don't understand it.
Yeah, for sure.
Anyway, but overall, I thought it was a pretty enjoyable hardcore match. I mean, there was one spot towards the end as well. There's like a really dramatic battle on the apron. To a side of a fight over who gets to fall into this fucking whole thing of wooden stakes and barbed wire and stuff. And then we see a cactus, the classic cactus elbow with a chair onto all that stuff with a Wing on it, which is just
that was brutal.
Jesus.
Oh. Yeah.
And Cactus just falls all through that crap. And eventually Cactus, this is kind of curious now, because if he was going to WWF or, because he wins with his DDT, which, actually does look brutal on top of like, I think it was on top of some barbed wire and crap. Maybe it wasn't. That escapes me, but, it seemed like they put over Cactus Jack pretty strong here, which would seem odd if it was his like, you know, I'm out of here match.
He might have came back a couple more times. Who knows? But yeah, this was in May. So he was already on WWF TV. So
weird. That's so weird.
Yeah. Very fascinating.
If anyone has insight into that, they can also hit us up.
There you go.
Where can they hit us up, Stephen? Why don't we inform our fans of this?
I don't really know.
The Facebook,
Twitter, either of those places. There's a PWPTBN Podcast Network Facebook page, which you can comment on the show.
You should all go like that right now.
Yeah.
If you've gotten this far into this hardcore podcast, you should be liking that and communicating.
Hardcore like the page.
You can go to ProWrestlingOnly.com, leave a comment in the thread there, or, hit any one of us up on Twitter. What's your Twitter account, Mark?
I am at Mark D. Claire, at Mark M-A-R-C, the letter D, Claire, C-L-A-I-R.
And what's yours, Glenn?
I am at Glenibun, G-L-E-N-N-I-E-B-U-N, on Tumblr, on Twitter, on Donner and Blitzen.
Yeah, Glenn and I couldn't have more opposite Twitter handles. I'm just like, here's my name. He's like, I'm Glenn Ebbard.
I know, that's so awesome.
Yeah, that's the opposite of how my email went.
That's so corporate.
Like, when I was in college, I had to get an email address with my name in it because I could not give Glennibun to my professors. I just could not bear.
Yeah, sure. You want to send me this your feedback? Just sure. Hit me up at Glennibun at AOL.com.
Yeah, sure, awesome. sure. I'll sign up to get, you know, the digital copy of the schedule for the whole semester, you know, for the readings and everything. Just send it to Glennibun. No.
Nope. Yeah, Stephen Graham, TWS, if you want to hit me up. But let's move on. So
hit him up with some shattered glass.
Please do not.
No, please don't. Violence isn't the answer, kids.
It's the question. I'm glad they made that laugh. So let's move on to another match on the same show. And I think maybe the best death match I've ever seen in my life. And this is Combat Toyota's retirement match as she took on Megumi Kudo. Same show. This is also a no rope explosive barbed wire death match. Mark, they have some promos before this that are luckily subtitled.
Luckily, yes. I thought you were going to ask me to translate the Japanese for a minute, but yes, no, there were subtitles. So I don't need to do that. It was both the promos were very low key. They came across as, basically they both said, this is Combat Toyota's last match. We are going to give it our all. We will be very respectful towards each other. And, I really am looking forward to the challenge and, see you at the, no rope barbed wire exploding death match.
Yeah.
That sums up both of their promos, I think. Pretty much,
yeah. But yeah, a little neat. You see these promos sometimes, you have no idea what they're saying, but it was nice to see.
I almost wish I didn't, because I would have imagined, like, I'm going to kill you, I'm going to murder you, I want to tear her head off. No, pretty much just, I respect you very much, can't wait to have a good contest. Just really funny for a hardcore death match.
Oh, for sure. So Glenn, what's your first kind of thoughts on this match?
Well, my first thoughts on the competitors was, do you guys know the meme going around based on the Onion headline, cinnamon roll, too perfect for this world, too pure?
Not at all.
No.
Okay. So there's this meme that's been going around. There's this Onion headline and there's this meme about various characters in TV shows that, you know, fandoms are passing around, saying what character is a cinnamon roll or could actually kill you. But some characters look like they could kill you, but are actually cinnamon rolls because they've got, you know, a soft, perfect, sweet and pure core to their spirit. And there are some characters who look like a cinnamon roll, but could actually kill you.
Okay.
Now, Combat Toyota looks like she could kill you and could actually kill you. Megumi Kudo looks like a cinnamon roll because she's small and cute and got that, like, almost fragility going on, but could actually kill you. Because she is, it seems, a solidly skilled wrestler. In terms of hardcore matches, so I absolutely could actually kill you. The thing, it's hard in wrestling to find someone who is actually a cinnamon roll, because in order to be in wrestling, you have to be capable of great violence. But I would put it in terms of Mick Foley, we were just talking about. In the olden days, kind of looks like he could actually kill you. Ever since Mankind turned face, basically, with the three faces and all his returns and all that, except when he was a heel in 06. He basically, you know, looks like a cinnamon roll. You know, he's kind of sweet and cuddly. You just want to hug him. But he's still a wrestler. He still could kill you. Although maybe not now that he's Santa Claus. It's debatable. And I was debating this a little bit earlier, so I won't recapitulate that whole thing. But that was the impression that I got as soon as I saw these two competitors. That and Combat Toyota is dressed like the one person at Hot Topic who's actually hardcore. You know, she's got the leather and the pink hair and all these different things going on. They are definitely doing the whole big versus little dynamic, which I just eat up in wrestling, especially in women's matches, because you don't get it as much, because they're in the wrestling that I tend to watch, there aren't nearly as many big women. So I like getting to see it, especially when it's good. You know, Kudo smacks Toyota in the gut. Toyota just gets angry. Kudo goes to slam her and can't, and then eventually she does. Silly Kudo, actually, going for the pin before anyone's been carved up by the barbed wire. That's not a savvy move.
I thought it was smart. Get the hell out of there before you're cut up.
Yeah, but the way that narrative works, you ain't gonna get there, dude. maybe if you're going for naturalism in an exploding barbed wire death match.
Which you should.
Well, maybe. So Toyota drop kicks Kudo into the barbed wire, which I only found out at that point was exploding barbed wire again. And again, kind of works in good psychology. She kicks her into it. She hits the exploding barbed wire with her back, and then Toyota works the back.
Yeah. Crazy, eh?
What? Logic.
Toyota gets sent into the wire, and while she's stunned and dazed from that, Kudo hooks on a sleeper hold.
Yep.
Again, I don't want to say naturalism, but it makes sense.
Yeah, it's great psychology in this match for sure. Oh, and then the third barbed wire spot, the German suplex.
Oh my goodness. Such suplexes, especially the Germans, some of the power bombs, this was full on dropping people on their heads. And when they did it into the barbed wire, it was just ridiculous.
Yeah. The drama, we talked about the drama in the first one, but like, I feel like it was even crazier here. Like, you even had Onita, who was sitting there watching the match, and he's getting all emotional himself, like, watching this spectacle. This was crazy. What did you think of this, Mark?
I love this match so much, and mostly because it wasn't that violent. I mean, it became violent, but it really built to the violence in a logical, rational way. As you guys kept pointing out, there was legitimate psychology. After a certain spot with the barbed wire happens, they follow that up with something that makes sense to follow it up with, which is so something you just don't expect to see in a hardcore exploding rope, or, you know, no ropes exploding or barbed wire exploding, whatever match. I mean, you just expect explosions and cutting and bleeding and all this shit, which you don't get a ton of in this match. What you get is a really good wrestling match between two very good wrestlers that sort of happens to have the stuff around the ring and plays into it. But I really love that even, I think it was maybe, I don't want to say like 10 minutes before they even, before that one spot where Kudo first hits the ropes, it was all about building towards staying away from that. They are both so aware of the danger surrounding them that they will take any precaution to not actually fall into that barbed wire and get hit with an explosion, because obviously if you do that, you might just end the match there, and neither of them want to. They're all focused on winning the match. Everything is about winning the match, not just needlessly harming your opponent like they do in most of these death matches when they go to the outside and they're just cutting each other, throwing them through things. It's just because they want to hurt each other. That's not how this match is at all. This match is actually about one thing and one thing only, and that's winning the match. Oh my God, what a crazy idea. And I love that there was all this build up to that first spot. I mean, that really made the rest of the match for me, and the rest of it played out logically. I mean, I love how they would get headlocks in, and Combat Toyota would try to push Kudo into the ropes with a headlock, and she did a slide, like this baseball slide, so that she didn't touch the barbed wire and still held the headlock on. And then, like you said, they kick Kudo or not Combat in the gut, and she'd almost stagger back, like she was almost going to hit it, but she regained her balance. And that was all that she had to focus on for that moment, was regaining her balance so she didn't hit this barbed wire rope. I just thought it was so beautifully done. And talking about it now makes me appreciate it even more, just thinking back at it, because it really is. I mean, I wasn't expecting – I can't say I wasn't expecting much, because I did recall this was also a highly rated match by Chad. It was on his list much deeper down than the Funko Nina match. So I had some idea that I should expect a good match, but I just really was – very at awe and very incredibly impressed with the psychology and the thought that went into every single motion in the whole match. I mean, it was just such a well done a piece of art, dare I say,
sure.
I describe an exploding death match this way. So it was really great. And do we want to talk about the finish yet, or do we have more?
Yeah, go for the finish there, Mark.
Yeah, so I mean, the actual finish, I think there were several power bombs that Combat hit. Now they're just in the center of the ring. I mean, the barbed wire is no longer a factor. They had their explosions, and now they're trying to pin each other. Now that they've, you know, beaten each other down so much. And I think she hits like 3 power bombs on Kudo or something. She keeps fighting back, and then eventually Kudo gets her up and her. How the hell would you describe this move? Her finishing move.
I think it was I think they call it the spinning a Kudo driver.
Yeah. Okay. Let's go with that. Kudo driver. Anyway, it looks really impressive, especially on this gigantic Combat Toyota who looks like she's straight out of Glow, only she can actually really wrestle really well. And finishes the match in the center of the ring, wins, and then is that her dad or her father?
That was Onita.
That was Onita.
Yeah.
And what's his relation? Are they related in real life? Is that her wife? I mean,
no, Onita.
It wasn't clear to me.
Onita's he's the promoter. He's kind of like, he's kind of the boss. And
I did not know that. I really didn't recognize him.
Yeah.
I totally didn't recognize him either. And I kind of feel uncomfortable about that.
I'm used to seeing him as Leaf, like dressed like Leaf Cassidy from the New Rockers, like saying that one, like he was in the Funk match with his little singlet. But, yeah. And so I guess it's just a respect thing, because Combat Toyota, it's her retirement match. He's spent his whole career promoting her matches or whatever. So he comes into the ring and dumps a bucket of water on her head to try to get her up, because she's like completely unconscious. And then he actually carries this giant woman out of the ring. And it was awesome. I love this match.
Yeah, it's so good. Oh my God.
I was ready to like not care about it, you know, because I mean, let's be honest, there's not that many women's matches I've been blown away by in my life. And maybe it's because I am not exposed to a lot of the great women's wrestling out there. I know that there's a lot of it, but I don't know. I mean, especially with the match we saw, which I enjoyed every match that we watched so far in some way, shape, or form. But this really was the most well-done presentation of many matches, not just of death matches I've seen, but out of all the matches I've seen in my life. I mean, this was so well done. So, I mean, awesome, just fantastic.
Yeah, this is this is one of the greatest matches. Well, I think I put it 4 3/4 just to be a jerk, but yeah, this is one of the all-time classics here. Glenn, were you blown away by this in the end too, or?
I had a really good time watching this. It was, like you said, so much of it made sense in such a context that doesn't make any damn sense. That contradiction kind of got me. I was buying the drama after the match when Onita was trying to wake them up, you know, dousing them with water and slapping them, and they weren't waking up because they have both died. It was in the name of the match.
Yeah.
They have died a Japanese death in this Japanese death match.
Yeah, man, this should have been the last match we watched, because like nothing's not too much is going to top this.
Yeah, if you were booking this card, you mess up the order a little bit.
Yeah. Well, there's one match.
Although you could argue ending anything with the Funko Nita time bomb match, because how do you have a match after the ring explodes? So
that's,
I guess,
true.
That's probably how you'd end it.
Yeah, there's what I wanted to do, like when I was first making this list, is I was looking for. There's this series in 99 and 2000 with Hanma from New Japan Now. And I forget his opponent, but they had these matches in 99, 2000 that everyone just raves about as the greatest, you know, death matches of all time. But I couldn't find any on YouTube. So instead.
Again, let's go to our listeners. Listeners Vault.
Yeah.
And it's a Hanma hardcore match of any kind, because I'm intrigued to see him in that fashion, because I only know current New Japan, you know, scrappy underdog Hanma. The idea that he did hardcore.
He started in Big Japan Pro Wrestling, a deathmatch promotion. So.
What, once again, listeners, can I call you my friends? Friends. Help us out here, alright? Give us the footage!
I'm sure I can find it and get it to you guys. I'm pretty sure I know where to find it. I just didn't want to download it and do it that way.
I just didn't want to break several international laws, but I will now that we've exhausted all resources.
Yeah. I want a nice playlist for YouTube for the friends here who are listening.
Our hardcore friends.
Our hardcore friends. Yeah. But yeah, this is an epic, but we have one more match. And it features, you know, some people we know well here on the Super Extreme Vault. We got Terry Funk. We got Mike Awesome. We got Masato Tanaka, and we got Hayabusa. Another FMW show from September 24th of 96. What did you think of this one, Mark?
This felt like, well, like you said, it really is, because it actually didn't feel that extreme after everything we had seen. You know what I mean? It wasn't like, where's the glass? Like, no, it was so, like, it felt more like one of the best ECW hardcore tag matches I would see, if that makes
That's
sense.
That's exactly what I wrote in my notes. It was like a wild ECW tag match. Yeah.
Right. And, you know, a lot of the classic, it was basically an Awesome versus Tanaka match, like in terms of the formula, just with two other really good workers in there in terms of Terry Funk, probably top five worker of all time, and then Hayabusa, who's quite a good wrestler and quite fun to watch. And I'll admit, I do not have extensive notes on this match because I just kind of watched it towards the end after I was mentally exhausted by the Combat Toyota match. But it was a very enjoyable 15 minutes, and I wish that review didn't downplay how good it was, because if this is the opening match we watched, I'd probably have a lot more extensive raving to do. Or if this was like the main event of some ECW show we watched, I would probably really rave about it. But it's interesting to watch this in the context of everything else we watched, though, because it was very good, very hard hitting. You get all those, I mean, especially the finish. I mean, that last spot with the big top power bomb off the top rope, even though the setup may have been kind of contrived, which is my biggest complaint of a lot of the setups to like these ECW type finishes, especially with like Awesome and Tanaka. I love their matches, but there's always like some moment where they're like, all right, I'm just gonna balance on this table and I'm gonna kind of walk up the ropes and we're gonna hold on to each other, and oh, then the big move, and you know, that it kind of kills it for me a little bit when I can see that whole setup for like 30 seconds. It's like, all right, this is not, I know what's gonna happen, it's gonna look good, but I'm not buying the realism.
Yeah, it's a little bit like, oh, New Jack punched me, I gotta take a nap on this table for a while.
Oh, exactly, and that's something I wanted to mention before, when there's one spot back in the Cactus Wing match where, you know, Wing sets up Cactus on this table, and he's about to go to the top rope, and then I guess he has some second guy, some wrestler out there, who grabs Cactus and holds him while Cactus is struggling, and then Wing jumps to the table. I'm like, thank you, somebody, for addressing this concept of why people just lay on tables waiting to get splashed through.
Hey,
like,
we saw that. We saw that on a recent ECW pay-per-view we watched, where New Jack duct taped Mustafa.
Oh yeah, that's right.
Yes,
to the table.
Yes, he did.
Yeah. I always appreciate when that is at least attempted to be addressed in some way, because it's always silly to me when someone just gets like punched, especially when they've been like pile drove, power bomb, hit with chairs, and then they get like punched and lay down for like a half hour waiting to get splashed.
For sure.
Overall, I would call it a very, very, very enjoyable match that seems like the least hardcore thing we watched, which is weird.
Yeah, this is the only match we watched that wasn't a death match. It was just kind of a regular hardcore match type of thing.
Well, that makes sense. It didn't feel like a death match. It felt like an ECW match.
It did feel like an ECW match. So, segue us into watching ECW next show. But what did you think of this one, Glenn?
That was one of the first things in my notes as well, that it totally felt like a transition back to ECW. There was a big dive by Mike Awesome that didn't really connect, but points for trying. It had, as an ECW match in spirit, it had all that crowd fighting and walk fighting between Awesome and Hayabusa that I was kind of ho-hum on. At one point, Terry Funk has a table set up against the ropes, and he runs Tanaka in it so hard that he almost sends himself over the top rope and winds up dangling on it for a second. And I just thought, man, that's our Terry. You know, he's dedicated to his craft, and he's not afraid to be goofy about it.
That's for sure.
Funk's selling is still awesome.
Oh.
Like, it's just so goofy. He almost gets to Shawn Michaels level.
Well, the thing, like, it's so goofy in some ways, but it's so, like, I feel like in every Terry Funk match, there's something interesting, right? Like, he does his wobble sell, or he does, I don't know, he's so fascinating to watch. I love watching Terry Funk. But it's not like comedy. It's not like, the FBI in there or anything. Like, it's like...
Oh, yeah, no. It's not, like, out-and-out comedy. It's just, you know, he's moiterizing people, but he's a little goofy, too.
Yeah. He's an old man getting the crap beat out of him type of thing, right? Yeah. It's fascinating. I love it.
Also, man, Tanaka just can't escape Mike Awesome in any country, can he?
No, which we'll see in a couple shows from now in our ECW watching, but...
Yeah.
They are permanently wedded together.
That's for sure.
Also, speaking of Awesome and Tanaka and ECW, I believe the mainstay of the Place to Be Network, the Place to Be podcast, is doing One Night Stand this week.
Oh, another time they face off.
Indeed, and something that we'll get to in about 5 years, probably.
Yeah, I actually have a 3-disc. DVD set covering the Mike Awesome Masato Tanaka feud.
Wow. Well, you had that for the Headhunters.
Yeah, I wish. But yeah, it covers all their FMW matches, their ECW matches, and who knows where else. But
I gotta let you guys in a secret. I was actually asked to be on that One Night Stand show.
Nice.
But I said no, because eventually I'm gonna redo that. With these guys.
And then you'll have to do it twice.
In
that'd be weird.
20 years or whatever, whenever we get to the One Night Stand.
One day, we will.
I didn't actually say no. They actually, I think Jordan Duncan was there live or somebody, so they're going with them. But I like to pretend I would have said no if I had really thought about it for a while. Anyway, Extreme Bowl for Life is what I'm saying.
Nice.
All right.
But yeah, this was a good, you know, if this was on an ECW pay-per-view, I think we'd be raving the shit out of it. So,
I don't know. I was a little put off by it. Maybe you're right.
I think in context. Sure. I think it's context here.
I think if we had just watched like Chris Chetty against let's see, who sucks? Who else sucks in ECW? You know, if we had just watched some
Danny Dory
standard ECW matches before this, we'd feel differently about it.
Chris Chetty versus Sally Graziano.
No, because he's maybe Sal, yeah, or who else sucks?
If we had to watch Shane Douglas,
there's only like 3 guys in ECW who suck, so it shouldn't be
just
like
Incredible.
Yeah, Chris Chetty versus Just Incredible, and then this, I think this is like 5 stars. But after Combat Toyota and Kudo, you know,
that's true. but that brings us to the end of the footage we have here. So you know, it's your first four way. Foray? What's that word? Your first attempt in...
Foray?
Foray. Yeah, there you go.
Not four-way, Steven. Are you inviting someone else on the call?
we'll talk about that later.
I'm hardcore!
Exactly. Into Japanese death matches. So, Glenn, I'm just curious. Would Japanese death matches be something else, or like even American death matches, because there's, you know, IWA Mid-South and all these companies, CCW, is that something you want to look into more, or if you had your fill of death matches?
I think these might be best sprinkled out in small doses. The reputation I know that CCW has is just a ton of garbage matches. With, you know, now with the light tubes and all that. I mean, that, even like the deathmatch style thing they had at Ultima Lucha with Vampiro and Pentagon Jr., I did not get into that.
Oh, I love that match.
I really enjoyed that match.
I didn't think that had any content. It was just gross. I didn't buy into the drama of it. I didn't buy into the Vince Russo shit.
Oh, I was into the drama. I love the story. But here's something interesting.
It was just a sad old man getting hit over the head with light tubes. And I hated that. So I think in small doses with people who are good, like Terry Funk and apparently Combat Toyota, in small doses, I think it would be something that would add a little spice to your wrestling viewing. It's variety, you know?
Yeah, maybe we'll do a Japanese death match part two in like a year or so.
I'm open to it. I mean, I don't think I need to see a match like Headhunter A versus B again. I like the Mario aspect. I like the flying fat dude aspect. I don't need to see the glass. And I mean, I can watch it. I don't have like a queasy stomach. I can watch any of this.
Would you invite a date over to watch it?
I may have different romantic strategies than Glenn when it comes to that. If that's what you're
I don't think you said it on the podcast, but you were.
I know.
It on the podcast, but last night, after going out on a hot date to see The Martian, I brought my boyfriend back home and made dinner, and you know, with some nice pasta and fine wine, very romantic. And I said, you know, I've got to watch some of these matches for a podcast I'm doing tomorrow, and my boy is a wrestling fan in his own right, which is a new experience for me, dating someone who is also a wrestling fan. One of the first things he did when we started going out was he lent me his High Spots Stan Hansen in Japan set.
Ooh.
And told me, this
He's
guy's
a keeper.
Great. And he told me, Stan Hansen is great. You have to watch this.
Wow.
Stan Hansen is currently number one in my greatest wrestler ever poll. Yes.
I've seen the first few discs of this thing, and I haven't really gotten into it like I should, because there were a whole lot of matches with, who were all of those? Inoki.
Oh, okay.
I think there were a ton of those that I didn't like.
Did you get to a Hansen-Andre the Giant match yet?
Yes,
Oh, my God.
There was one that wasn't on this set, actually, but that Chad, friend of the show, told me I had to see, and he sent me a link to that, and that was such a spectacle.
That's one of my favorite matches ever.
Steven told me I had to watch that once in a time, and I watched it at Steven's behest once, and also awesome.
I've made so many people watch that match. I love that match.
Although I was absolutely shocked, because until then, I was under the impression that Andre the Giant had never been body slammed until Hulk Hogan body slammed him.
Nope.
So I guess that was a lie.
Of course. I mean, of course, he had never been beaten. He had never been body slammed. He'd never been so much as knocked off his feet.
Sure.
I mean that's canon.
But how'd your boyfriend react to this match?
we only saw the first few matches. He liked all the stuff with Terry Funk in the first match. We did not get to the Combat Toyota match, sadly. We got like partway through the Cactus Jack match before he had to go. Headhunter Luigi versus Headhunter Mario, we were both really into. So it was a fine evening, yes, to be sure.
Okay, well, good. Date tips by Glenn here. So,
hey. This is the only time in my life that I have ever offered dating tips to anyone, but I mean, it seems pretty basic, right? If there's an interest that you have in common, do it together.
Yeah, that's really good advice, actually. So we should probably end the show then, because that's whoa! I unplugged my headphones and now everything sounds strange.
Uh oh.
There we go. So Mark, do you have anything to plug?
Sure. Actually, a lot coming up this week with, some of you may know, I do my own podcast, the Lions of Liberty podcast, where I try to, sort of work out the current day politics in the terms of the ideas of liberty, individual liberty, the things I like to promote. And, right now we've got a couple of things going on. I don't know how everything works in Canada with the presidential debates president, prime minister debates or however it works, but we have some pretty freaking absurd ones. And
yes, you
luckily,
do. It's insane.
We absolutely do. And you know, while I do somewhat serious show, we really toss the seriousness out of the window when we do our our debate reaction shows. So even if you're not into politics or libertarianism or the sort of things that I discuss, you might really still find these next couple of shows we do pretty interesting. So we're going to have a GOP debate reaction show coming up this coming Thursday. The debate is tomorrow night. And this Saturday, I'm actually going to take a Saturday night off to watch a Democratic debate and record a reaction show on that, which will be out next Monday. So if you're interested in hearing myself and a couple of good friends of mine, we also drink on these reaction shows openly, and we talk about what we're drinking. Bet. We fully just do not pretend that we're trying to take it too seriously. So it really is a good time. So I enjoy doing these shows quite a lot with a few friends of mine, and those will be out. You can follow the Lions of Liberty podcast. You can find us on iTunes. You can follow us on Twitter at Lions of Liberty. Find us on Facebook, you know, everywhere you find stuff. So please do consider checking us out. If you enjoy my commentary on hardcore wrestling, you just may enjoy my commentary on American political debates.
So during the first Republican debate, there was also a debate here in Canada because our election was going on and is over because it was 84 days and it was the longest one in modern history. And your guys are like 3 years long for some reason. So it was the same night, the two debates, and the next day, the Young Turks, a YouTube news channel, they had a comparison between the two debates. And, you know, while in Canada, they're discussing the issues and debating, in America, I don't know what they're doing. So it was a very fascinating video, very comical.
In America, it's like, hey, you don't like Donald Trump, right? You guys should argue now. That's basically like every question. it's trying to make them, you know, argue against each other. I mean, the way they form the questions are not from a position of what makes sense to, you know, as the answer to this. It's from the position of what will make two of these guys argue for a while. I mean, that's really all it is. But once in a while, you do get some good issues that get brought up. So we do try to also highlight that stuff whenever we can. But mostly it's just a mock fest, and that's what we do.
Oh, I can imagine. Glenn, anything for you?
Well, I will thankfully not be watching any of the debates because there's nothing they're going to say that matters to me. But, things to plug. Every Wednesday morning at PlaceToBeNation.com, I have the Wednesday Walk Around the Web. It is a link roundup where I gather links from all around this wide, wonderful web of ours, that I find, interesting or entertaining in some way. So please check it out every week. In terms of podcasts, I was recently on the Main Event. I think that was a couple of weeks ago. I also recently recorded the premiere episode of a new podcast, Rank and File, where I went on there with Jordan Duncan and Steve Willey, who ranked our top 10 current performers in wrestling. It was recorded right before Seth Rollins' injury, so it's already drastically outdated. But that's just the way it goes. That should be coming out very soon. I have been on the Live Watch Party. The last couple episodes of that, we did episodes of Monday Night Raw from 93. We're going to be recording one soon that's a special edition of that, moving a little bit away from the 93 Raws. So please look out for that. And anything else that I appear on will certainly be coming. I don't think I have anything else scheduled quite yet.
Well, fair enough. What have I done? I recorded a podcast last week, but only the first 13 minutes recorded. So I put that out. It was going to be a top six on tag teams. We talked for about 90 minutes with Will and Tim, and it was a good fun show, but you only get the first 13 minutes, so apologies to that. Actually, I'm kind of dreading looking at the file here after we're done recording to make sure it recorded, because I'm a little scared that it didn't record. But we'll see. So maybe no one's heard this. Eek.
Too cool.
Too cool. But yeah, and also I'm doing Place to Be Nation. I'm writing a series on Goldberg. I did about a month ago. I did his September of 97, his first month on TV, and I just last week put out his October, his second month on TV. I was gonna do November in November, but he has like no appearances in November except for like run-ins, so I might have to push November and December together. But yeah, I'm gonna be going through Goldberg's career match by match by match, so, and comparing his fake record to his real record to his televised record, some fun analysis of the numbers and see what's going on there. But yeah, and seeing how he evolves, and it's actually quite quickly. Like, he debuts after 4 matches, which is insane. And then about 8 matches into his career, he's already got the spear and the jackhammer and the music. So it's pretty quick. But yeah, I love me some Goldberg squashes, some of the best things in wrestling to watch. So take a look at that on Place to Be Nation. I think it's called Who's Next? A look at Goldberg's career, but I could be wrong because who knows. But yeah, check that out.
Are we doing best matches or MVPs or anything?
Oh, we should, eh? Yeah.
I mean, I'm not the host, but
no, you're better host than me, apparently. So so Mark, who's the MVP of this show?
Very difficult. I mean, to me, all MVP and best match conversation comes down to 2 matches. But I'm gonna give MVP to Terry Funk because I just loved his performance individually in the time bomb match. I think that and the combat Toyota Kudo match are 1A and 1B of match of the night. I guess I'll reveal that in a second, but I thought Terry Funk's individual performance, but I mean, just everything between the crowd was into everything he did, every chop he did, every punch he did. And I thought, I mean, it didn't match the psychology of the combat Kudo match, but they really used some really good psychology in that time bomb match as well. And the uniqueness of it and the emotion that Funk portrays afterwards and how he just re-heel turns on him in the locker room. I just loved everything about everything he did from the locker room to that final shot in the end of the match in the locker room again. So, I'll give it the MVP to Mr. Terry Funk, one of the greatest of all time.
Yeah, and I have to give it to Anita, because his performance in that first match was just amazing. All the post-match stuff there. And then he had the post-match stuff from the Kudo combat match.
See, when I wrote these down, I hadn't even, factored that was him in. So, yeah, that might have put him over if I had redone this.
Yeah, so I go with Anita. What about you, Mark?
I am Mark. I just said that.
You did. Glenn. Fucking hell.
Yes, hello. I had the exact same thought that Mark did when you started this conversation. MVP's Terry Funk, because he had just a little bit in that second match that put him over.
Yeah, good. How about match of the night? Are we all going with the combat Toyota versus Megumi Kudo match, or is there anything else?
I know I am. Yeah.
Oh yeah, completely.
Yeah, I am. I mean, it's close. I think the time bomb match is very, very good too. But just the way that they laid out that match again. I mean, the fact that it was a death match that you didn't see a single, throw into that barbed wire for the first like 10 minutes, and it was really enjoyable the whole time building up to that. I mean, that just says it all about what went into the laying out of this match. So absolutely, it goes to combat versus Kudo.
Awesome. So what about the spot of the night, the oh my god moment? Mark, what do you think?
It's really hard to beat a big fat guy doing a moonsault onto another big fat guy who's his twin brother in between 2 tables covered in barbed wire. So I'm going to go with Mario / Headhunter B moonsaulting onto his, I guess not his baby brother. I wanted to call him that, his twin brother, through on top of those 2 barbed wire covered tables, because that was crazy.
That was crazy. What about you, Glenn?
Yeah, I'm not sure which one is the big brother and which one's the little brother. I don't know in which order they were born.
B seems like he's the one in charge, He seems more like, I don't know, take chargey, but I don't know.
It couldn't have been more than a couple minutes.
I mean, yeah.
Well, I don't know. A lot of things can happen in labor. I just don't know how that went for a mama headhunter.
Poor woman.
Maybe. I'm inclined to give it to that same moonsault spot. Fuck it. Yes. Because, finally, the fat guy hit the moonsault. I mean, I can't. I was going to say something else for variety, just so we don't agree on everything in this listing. But yeah, he hit the moonsault. It's my dream fulfilled.
Man, I want to go with the clock. Like, that. Maybe when the clock hit a minute. And the different music came on, or maybe the explosion, Like, something around there I just thought was... You know what? I'm going to give it to Onita on the outside trying to figure out if he should save Terry Funk or if he should run away and save himself. And then going into the ring and covering Terry Funk up to save his life. That's my spot of the night.
That is a sneaky, like, all-time babyface spot.
Yeah, that's freaking great. I love that. But... That's all our words. So that brings us to the end of the show. Glenn, how do you want to take us out of here?
Well, I was thinking, you know what happens after a Japanese death match once the competitors have died a Japanese death?
Oh, boy.
They must rest in peace.
I'm a